this.
So this morning, I'd like to talk a little about two types of practices that are practices we can use to part the veils. I was talking last time about parting the veils, and I'm going to quote Rumi again. This is love, to fly toward a secret sky, to cause 100 veils to fall each moment, first to let go of life, in the end to take a step without feet, to regard this world. Come on in. To regard this world as invisible and to disregard what appears to be the self. So I'd like to talk about focusing and calming practices, and I'd like to talk about bare awareness practice. Both of which are replete in the meditation literature in Buddhism and in Zen. So, focusing and calming. So what we teach here is what Katagiri Roshi taught and what Suzuki Roshi taught, are holding our body immobile and then focusing on our breath. And then if we have, if we'd like to, getting support by counting our breath. Probably the simplest of all of the different focusing techniques. So simple that some people find it very boring. But boring is not bad. One of the poets I read when I was young was Alfred Lord Tennyson. And Alfred Lord Tennyson... Alfred Lord Tennyson, focusing practice was what? Does anyone remember what I said? It was focusing on his own name. Repeating his own name over and over again with his breath. I mean, he didn't know anything about Buddhism or Buddhist practice or meditation. He just discovered that by just slowly and quietly repeating his own name with his breathing, he really mellowed out. And, of course, children do focusing and calming practices a lot. And we seem to forget that as children we learned how to do focusing and calming when we were upset about stuff. And what do you think those nursery rhymes are all about? What do you think those stories that calm us down before we go to sleep at night that I read to my grandson, what do you think they're all about? They're about focusing and calming. So that we can part the veils that make us feel cut off from each other, make us feel cut off from this big, wonderful life that's wonderful and horrible and chaotic, but it's what is. And I've talked before, but not for a while, about the nursery rhyme that I was fond of when I was 4 and 5 years old. When I was 4 and 5 years old, I lived at the top of a hill overlooking the San Francisco Bay in Berkeley. And I lived at the end of a street, which was called Panoramic Way. And there were no kids there, just me. I had my sister, but she was 2.5 years younger than me, so she was always just a baby for me. And so my main man, my main guy, was Bobby Shafto. And my calming and focusing practice was just Bobby Shafto. Bobby Shafto's gone to sea. Silver buckles on his knee. He'll come back to marry me. Pretty Bobby Shafto. Bobby Shafto's fat and fair, combing down his yellow hair. He's my love forevermore. Pretty Bobby Shapto. That was very helpful. I was lonely at 4 and 5. I had all these big people at the top of the hill. Only little ones were dogs, and dogs were scary. Dogs were very scary. And I would look out on that ocean. Well, it was a bay, but it seemed like a huge ocean to me. Ooh, I didn't know the difference. And feel really lonely. Feel really, really like I had nothing, like I had no one. Then I would recite to myself, as my mama did to me, Bobby Shafto's gone to sea. He'll silver buckles on his knee. He'll come back to marry me. And then he would come back across the bay to marry me. Every time he came back. This focusing and calming works, you guys. If it can work for a 5-year-old, can it work for a 50-year-old? Can it work for a 40-year-old if it can work for a 4-year-old? My solace. Bring me back to feeling alive when I was overcome with loneliness. At 4 and 5 years old. So this is our practice as adults, to use these focusing and calming practices to come back to our original stillness, regardless of how dense the emotion is, regardless of how cut off we feel. And in the meditative traditions in the East and West, often it's a deity that we use to focus on. A deity, right? A god or a goddess. My grandmother, who said she was jealous of my meditation ability, she told me this when I was like, 22, and she was however old she was at that time. She said, I've always tried. She was a Catholic who went to Mass very often, but she was a very liberal Catholic, so she was interested in Zen. And she said to me, I've always tried to do this meditation in complement to my prayer, but it never worked. And I said, well, Grandma, what about those Hail Marys I see you saying all the time? She said, oh, that's right, dear. Those do calm me down. Yes, I say them every morning and every night. She said, I feel much better, dear. Is that meditation? I said, sure, why not, Grandma? Why not? If it brings you back to just being here, to just being still, to just being available. I didn't say that to her then. I said, sure, why not, Grandma? So the story I've told before about the anchorite. The anchorite in the Eastern Orthodox tradition in Russia. This is an anchorite who wants to return to his original stillness, who wants to let go of the veils that he feels stifled by, wants to let go of them, wants to let them part. And it tries doing different meditation and prayer practices and discovers and hears that he can go see a famous bishop who knows how to do this stuff, right? And he goes to see the famous bishop. He goes on a sojourn to see the famous bishop. And he tells the famous bishop that he wants help in his meditation. And the famous bishop says something to him, and he goes off. And he's gone for about a year. He goes off and practices in kind of the way anchorites do, which is a solitary practice for the most part, a hermitage-type practice where they try to open themselves up and cleanse themselves of all their poisons. And so about a year later, the bishop is looking out his window on the lake in this wooded area, his attendant says to him, look, what's on the lake? I don't know how many of you remember me telling this story. It's been a while. And the bishop says, I don't know. He says, it's the anchorite. And the anchorite is slowly and calmly walking across the lake toward the bishop. he's focused and he's calm. He's walking across the lake. And so the attendant rushes to the door. The bishop sits down, kind of just confused. And the anchorite says to the attendant, "Well, can I see the bishop?" And the anchorite says, "Sure, sure." I mean, the attendant says, "Sure, sure, come on in, come on in." And he sits down in front of the bishop, and the bishop says, "And, you know, welcome, welcome." And the anchorite said, "Well, I have a question for you." And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Yes." And he said, "What I've been repeating, you said it to me in high Russian, and I did my best to remember it, but I'm not sure if I've been repeating it correctly. You told me to repeat this with every breath, with every movement. You told me to, but am I saying it correctly?" And the bishop looked at him and said, "Well, let me hear." And he said, "May dog have mercy on my soul." And the bishop said, "Yes, yes." And the bishop took off his bishop robes and followed the anchorite, and they went off together. Okay. Focusing and calming. Focusing and calming. And in India, Om, those of you who are exposed to Hinduism or anything, Om, very often used as focusing and calming device. In Zen China, where they did the "Does the dog have Buddha nature?" Kon, wu, which means no thing, wu, 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 with every breath for all sesshin, 7 days. Wu in the in-breath, wu in the out-breath. And then what in Japan? Well, they changed the wu to mu in Japan. No thing. I went to a retreat years ago at a Rinzai center, and everybody was just mooing the whole time. Moo, moo. And the teacher was really into mooing, too. Beautiful, wonderful focusing technique. My wife said, "You're like a bunch of cows. We didn't mind. We don't mind. Call us anything you want. Call it anything you want." That was in Ojai when I went to that retreat. I'm looking at Monica, who just spent time in Ojai. And then the deities are feminine. More often than not, they're feminine. It's very interesting. More often than not. Maybe because of the nurturance, maternal aspect of the feminine. In India, ma, too. Ma, which means mom. Ama. All over India. Ma, ama. Deities. Kali, the great mother Kali, even though she devours everything, still she's the mama. She's the mama. And then in Zen, well, what do we chant here every morning? We chant about Prajnaparamita. Prajnaparamita, who is the wisdom that has gone beyond. Okay, Prajnaparamita, the wisdom that has gone beyond, but also the mama of Buddha. Also the deity who is the mama of Buddha. And we say every morning, we say, all bodhisattvas depend on Prajnaparamita. Kind of weird, huh? But who cares if it works? Find what works for you. Try it. Do it. Do focusing and calming. And it will change your life. It will change your life. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So when I was having a hard time in a retreat years ago, my teacher Suzuki told me to repeat from the Heart Sutra, Gyate Gyate. He said, just repeat this over and over again every time you have a hard time. Gyate Gyate Para Gyate Para Sam Gyate. It worked. Is it magical? Is dog magical? Is God magical? It's magical. They're all magical. And they're available. We can make them available. We should use focusing and calming techniques that resonate for us. That resonate for us. Or we can just use simple breathing. If breathing is ultimately our resonance, it's all about breathing. So we can couple any of these with breathing. If we don't couple them with breathing, we're probably not going to stay in our body. And we need to stay in our body. That's where we have a real opening, is in our body. And over the years for me, when in difficult situations, I've reminded myself, there's no success like failure, and failure is no success at all. Whenever I still do that, whenever I still, like I've screwed up, I just remind myself of that. Well, who helped me with that? Who helped me with that? Some young guy who thought he was a hot shot poet, right? And he was. And he's still helping me. And then on Saturdays, we have loving kindness as our focusing and calming. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. May my best friend be well. May my best friend be happy. May my best friend be free from suffering. May someone I'm having a hard time with be well. May someone I'm having a hard time with, whom we name. We don't have to name. We can name or not name. Sometimes naming gets us too agitated. We need to just generalize. Sometimes it helps to be that specific. May she be well. May she be happy. May she be free from suffering. Focusing technique, but not technique. Technique means too much in your head for me, too much trying to get something. Whereas practice has a more a valence that I like better. So those are focusing and calming. Focusing and calming, called shamatha in the classical literature. Shamatha in the classical literature. Complemented by bare awareness, which really is some people could say is shikan taza in Japanese, shikan taza, bare awareness, or shikan in Japanese, shikan. But bare awareness only works with kind acceptance. It only works with kind acceptance. So last time I was talking about my cat, my new kitten. And I was talking about the kitten jumping up on my bed when I'm trying to sit peacefully and read, or lie peacefully and read, kind of sit-lie, and grabbing onto my calf. And I couldn't remember the aura, but you told me what it was, a calf.
That's your calf.
Grabbing onto my calf. And how immediately I spun out. Now, I didn't harm the cat, but in 4 seconds, I blamed my wife for bringing this homeless cat in. In 4 seconds, I blamed her. But I went along to get the cat with her. I was just the passive one. The passive one always gets to blame the other one, right? Do you know about that? In that 4 seconds, I blamed my wife. I flung the cat with my calf to the other side of the room. Oh, I didn't hurt it because, you know, it's a kitten and it can do anything, right? It's got great balance. I swore. I da-da-da-da-da. Well, so I did that the first time, and I talked about it here. Well, now the second time, I've had lots of times in this last week to do it. Lots of times. So here's a chance for bare awareness, right? Now, I'm bringing the aggregates into view. The aggregates which make up our experience, bringing them into view. And not just letting emotion and thinking and comparing and judging dominate. So I've had lots of chances. Probably get another one tonight. Okay. there's the sensation. I'm feeling the sensation. All of a sudden, I don't expect it. You know, all of a sudden, there's a sensation in my calf, but it's just a little kitten. So although it's unpleasant, it's, you know, it's not going to kill me or anything, or even do me any damage, or even leave a mark. But there's the sensation on my leg, on my calf. And with a sensation, there can be, there is a perception. There, we make no room for the perception. But the perception is actually huge if we just see it. There's that fur ball. Somehow it was on the floor, and now it's flying through the air and touching me. It's a beautiful, wonderful, alive perception. And then after that perception, there's the reaction. There's the reaction. But if I really with the sensation, if I'm really with the perception, if I really notice the reaction, which is I don't have to make something out of it. I don't actually even have to give in to the reaction. It can be very small because of the perception and the sensation. The reaction, its velocity gets really slowed down, really slowed down. And I can react or not react. I have that freedom. I have that freedom. But this takes practice, lifetime practice. This is what we do on our cushion. And this is what we extend into our lives. And it's not practice in order to do something else. If it is, you'll never be satisfied. It's practice as this very moment, this very experience. So now I want to do an exercise with you guys. I want to do an exercise which is bringing emotion into view. And I think we'll, I wonder if we should, no, we don't need to dim the lights. You guys can just close your eyes or get your eyes half closed if you'd like. And I'm going to do, so here's a bare awareness, simple bare awareness exercise. And we don't do these exercises formally in Zen, but we do them informally all the time when we're sitting facing the wall. If you're doing meditation seriously, you will do these all the time. We're not out this guidance, but you're guiding yourself. You're guiding yourself. So, take a deep breath and notice that emotions come and go, like the passing sound of the ocean waves on the shore. The waves come into shore and then retreat back out. Similar to this process, we may have a slight feeling that grows in intensity until it reaches a peak, then subsides. This exercise will help you become more aware of your personal experience of various emotions, as sitting will, without doing this exercise. And you can begin to notice a natural ebb and flow. So take a couple of minutes to focus on your breathing. Now notice how you feel emotionally in the present moment. Do you feel good or bad? Are you happy or not happy? Is the feeling pleasant or unpleasant? What word best describes the specific emotion that you're feeling? Gently maintain your attention on your emotion. How intense is your feeling? Does it change or remain the same? How are you breathing as you're experiencing this emotion? What else is happening in your body? How's your posture feel? How do you embody the emotion? Do you experience areas of muscle tension? Of looseness? How does your face feel physically? Do you notice yourself smiling? Frowning? Squinting? Crying? Is there any area of your body that's uncomfortable? Notice any thoughts or judgments that arise. You might be tempted to cling to positive emotions or reject feelings as being undesirable, unacceptable, or intolerable. Instead, simply notice these thoughts without considering them to be true or reacting to them. Return your attention to your experience of the emotion itself in the present moment. As other emotions arise, notice what specific feeling has come into your awareness. Describe it as you did previously. Observe how your emotional landscape changes over time. And as we finish this exercise, take a moment to reflect on your tendency to hold on to or reject certain emotions. How does it affect your experience of the emotion itself? How does it affect your experience of the emotion itself? And when you're ready, you can just gradually bring your attention back to the room. Open your eyes. Okay, so I'd like to do a poll now. How many of you experienced positive emotion? One or more positive emotions. Raise your hand. How many of you experienced one or more negative emotions? Raise your hand. Aha, the negatives have it. Buddha was right. Buddha was right when he talked about bare awareness of the three poisons. This is classical Buddhist practice, to be aware of the three poisons. And each of the one of the three has many iterations. But you know, the three are greed and all of its derivatives, right? Lust, avarice, da 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 da. They're lists. You go into the Abhidharma and you find lists of greed and its derivatives. Hatred, and then all of its derivatives. Anger, jealousy, da da da. Delusion, and all of its derivatives. Confusion, repression, da 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 da. So I think we could go back and we could find out which of the poisons you were hanging out with, right? Oh, wouldn't that be fun? But this is part of the practice. This is part of the practice. And it's not that we cultivate them, it's they're in there. They're in there. And our kind, attentive awareness is the way to heal. The way to heal. That's the bare attentive practice, which is a complement to the focusing practice. Seeing them and facing them as they arise on our cushion in our life. Sometimes it's painful, sometimes it's embarrassing. We're embarrassed in front of ourselves. Even if nobody else knows, we're just embarrassed in front of ourselves. That's okay. See that? See that? The key to parting the veils is to see the veils. And then notice, actually, as we do that, that they're just gossamer. They're just gossamer. So the three poisons fragment us with their sharp edges. And they're sharp edges that lodge in our psyches, in our heart, in our mind, in our eyes. And in the form of splinters, in the form of shards, and they hurt.
They hurt.
And we carry around that hurt. Well, I'll pick on, I don't know, I always pick on Ben, but I'll pick on Monica. So, let's say that I overhear Monica saying, she doesn't even know I'm here, that my, oh, she's been coming for here for so many Sundays. And it's getting kind of boring. It's kind of boring to hear me say the same thing over and over and over again. When there's a beautiful day out there and the sky, and that she's bored by my talking. And I overhear that, right? I overhear that. So what happens? Well, a splinter. A splinter lodges in somewhere in my consciousness. I don't know if it's in my eye or my heart or where. It lodges in my consciousness. And I carry that splinter around so that I've got it at home with me, festering. Well, and then when I wonder if I'm going to see Monica next time I come to Zen Center, and what I'll do, and if I'll avoid her, and if I'll try to still be kind to her, even with a shard in here. Right? We do that. And then our whole life, we're just fragmented with these shards. Just fragment our relationships, fragment ourselves, and we forget our original stillness. We forget our original openness. Well, that's what this bare attention practice is about: to notice that, so we can come back to it, so it can heal. So, I talked about this in Rahatsu. Last Rahatsu. And I wondered after I talked about it, sometimes I just talk spontaneously without thinking. I wondered, where does this come from? And I said, well, where in my childhood fairy tales does this come from? I think this is where it comes from in my childhood fairy tales. Which are your childhood fairy tales, right, too? Unless you're much younger than me and you didn't do the same fairy tales. We did Grimm and Andersen. We did Grimm and Andersen. So this is Hans Christian Andersen. This is the Snow Queen. Anybody remember the Snow Queen from Hans Christian Andersen? Raise your hand if you remember the Snow Queen from Hans Christian Andersen. How many? Oh, only about less than half of you. Oh, well, I'm not going to read the whole story. It's long and long and long. And, you know, it's also very scary. So... I remember my dad read it to me when I was something like 8, and I was just scared shitless. Really, I thought, this is a fairy tale for a child? I'm not even going to be able to go to sleep for a week after reading this fairy tale. So it's a cool fairy tale, you guys. But anyway, so the heroine and the hero in the fairy tale are the two kids. The two kids, Kai. He's the boy, and Goethe. And the Snow Queen, who is an icy Snow Queen, right? Icy. That she hangs out with a troll. An evil troll who's made up of the three poisons. Now, I put a little Buddhism in there, right? He's nothing but the three poisons. That's all he is. And he has a troll mirror. He has a troll mirror that's just made up of poison. Just made up of poison. And it's made entirely of ice. You don't even remember this? This is a cool story. Made entirely of ice. And so Kai looks into the mirror, the boy looks into the mirror, and I don't know if he touches it or I have to go back and read it. It shatters. It shatters. And shards of the mirror get in his eye, a shard, and in his heart. And it changes his whole countenance. It changes his whole countenance. So, and that's while he and Goethe are looking at a picture book in their window box garden, they accidentally shatter the mirror, and these shards get into his heart. His personality changes. He becomes cruel and aggressive. He destroys their window box garden. He makes fun of his grandma, and he no longer cares about Goethe, his sister. Since all of them now appear bad and ugly to him, as with me and Monica. It's true. This is what happens. Monica says one thing, and a shard gets lodged. And then I generalize. I don't want to come to Zen Center anymore. You ever feel that way? I don't. Actually, hearing what she said, I didn't want to come here anymore. I don't want to even be married to Linda anymore if she said that. Did you really say that, Linda? You've been married 45 years. But it doesn't make any difference. You know how we are? How sensitive we are? You know. Because we're all the same, right? We're all the same. Wow. Wow. So, but Gerda, the Buddha nature, the kind Buddha nature, searches for Kai. Kai takes off, runs away, has many, many misadventures, gets imprisoned by the Snow Queen, is in solitary confinement, keeps dissing everyone and keeps getting dissed. But Gerda doesn't give up. Her love for him is so much that she just keeps, again, it's the girl, right? It's the feminine. Keeps pursuing him, keeps pursuing him, keeps pursuing him, even though he disses her. But then, finally, she finds him and is able to get into where his cell is or whatever it is. She runs up to him and she weeps warm tears on him, which melts his heart, burns away the troll mirror splinter entirely, burns it away. Remember, it's an ice. It's only ice. That's all it is. It's not glass. It's ice. Burns it away and dislodges the splinter from his eye. Gerda kisses Kai a few times. He becomes cheerful and healthy again with sparkling eyes and rosy cheeks. And the splinters in his heart and his eyes dissipate completely. Saved by the power of Gerda's love. He and Gerda dance around on the lake of ice, the lake of the poisons. They dance around on that lake so joyously that the splinters of ice which create the poisons are so enamored of their dance that the splinters are caught up in the dance. The splinters dance with them. When the splinters tire of dancing, they fall down to spell the very word Kai was trying to spell, eternity. Timelessness, stillness, calmness, which is beyond our thinking. And yet right here, eternity, right here. Always right here, always right here. Where else could it be? Where else could it be? So I'm going to finish by talking about my brother's suicide, which I have talked about before a number of times. So my brother committed suicide. And they had one brother, and he hung himself from a sheet you guys know what a regional treatment center is, in a locked ward of a hospital. So I was a priest here at the time, and I was sitting here every morning. And so after I went out to California and tried to do what I could, to kind of be with my family, I came back here, and I sat. I mean, this is what I did. This is what we do in Zen. We sit. This is what we do, in case you had any of you wondered about that. And we sit, and we sit, and we sit. Yeah, sometimes we sit using calming and focusing practice. Sometimes we sit using bare awareness practice. And it's good to complement the two. Good to complement the two. So I came back and I sat, but at first I wasn't able to do any calming, focusing, and I sure wasn't able to do any bare awareness. So I just sat like a what? Well, don't sometimes when you sit, you feel kind of dead? Do you ever feel like that? I felt kind of dead. I was just like putting in time, because I couldn't do anything else. And actually, if you sit retreats, and you should all sit retreats if you really want to get a taste of what I'm talking about. Sometimes you'll just feel dead in your sitting. You're not really dead, you know. You're breathing fine. You're sitting still, but you'll feel that sort of deadness. You'll feel enervated. So I felt dead. I felt dead. And then I tried focusing. I tried my focusing techniques. I tried, there's no success like failure. But that didn't work. That didn't work. The barb of hibbing totally let me down there. Totally let me down. Then I tried Gyate Gyate, which is from the Heart Sutra, which my teacher told me to recite, as I said, years ago when I was having a hard time in retreat. He said, whenever you're having your hard time in retreat, stop doing Shikantaza and just say Gyate Gyate to yourself. Well, in the Heart Sutra, Gyate Gyate is the mantra that we chant every morning. And it's gone, 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 beyond, gone, completely beyond. So I did that for years. So I tried doing that here, and I thought, and it didn't work. It didn't work. Because nothing was gone. I could say it was gone, but all of the heartache was here. So then here we're into about my third or fourth week back. I mean, I don't really know. You know, this is 1983, right? Now I'm still coming to Zazen. I've made my commitment. If you make your commitment to go into this way of being, you want to stick with it so that you can experience this openness. So you experience the stillness and the joy that comes from it. So I made my commitment. So finally, I just would say to myself, help, help. And that was my breathing. Help, help. For about 2 weeks. Sometimes I would, we weren't supposed to grimace, but nobody would know that I wasn't grimacing. And I cried inside a lot. Help, help, help. That focusing would help. And of course, we don't have a deity to help us. Well, I guess I should have said help Prajnaparamita or something, but I didn't even believe in Prajnaparamita necessarily, especially when this had happened. What God, you know, when something bad happens, how can you believe in somebody out there is going to help you? So it was just help, 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 until after another week or two, I was able to calm down and begin to be aware of the shards. Begin to be aware of my own guilt, feelings of guilt. My brother was younger than me. I felt, I didn't take care of him well. All the judgment that, the shards are encompassed in, they get infected because of the judgment. The ice in the eye, the ice in the heart that turns into infection doesn't have to become infected. It's just the judgment. And if we bring our kind attention to it before it develops an infection, we're fine. And we can still bring our bare awareness to it once the infection is there and dissipated. So I just worked with it. Did I work with it? Did I know what I was doing? No. No. Did I follow some specific technique in a book? No. Just over and over again. Over and over again until it begins to lift. The veils begin to lift. And you come back to your original stillness. To your original stillness. But you have to experience the shards first. In your heart, in your eyes, wherever they are. You have to let them be there with kind attention. With kind and loving attention. Maybe you're not ready to do that. That's okay. Then just do focusing for a while. Then just do calming for a while. That's fine. And maybe do calming, focusing for your whole life. But sometimes you will want to do bare attention. And bare attention is not more advanced than focusing. Not more advanced. I spent all this last session at the legislature trying to tell Tea Party folks about mental illness and why it should be funded. So every time I left, I'd say to myself, there's no success like failure. And failure is no success at all. And then I get in the car and go back and
breathe and turn around and come back to the legislature again and see the next guy or the next woman. That's life. But we can do wonderful things. We can be so involved in our communities if we give ourselves to this. We can make such a difference if we give ourselves to this. So those are the two complementary practices that I wanted to talk about today. Focusing, calming practices, and bare awareness practice. Comments, questions?
Sure. So I'm thinking back to my early childhood, and both, actually my brother and my sister and I were all bouncers and rollers. So I would sit in a chair and bounce repeatedly. Or lie on a couch and roll. And sometimes there was kind of breathing, which almost went into hyperventilation. You know, my sister became an alcoholic, and my brother has certifiable mental health issues. And I wonder about OCD. So, and I wonder about things like tantric practices, you know, the magical practices that for Zen Buddhists are off limits. We don't go there.
So what is... This is all interesting, but I don't know what you're where you're going. Maybe
I don't know where I'm going with this either. But it's just so there are these mind body things that one can do, which definitely have an effect. And it seems like some of them are healthier than others. And the ones that aren't healthy, kind of, I don't know what they do. They remove you from the problem somehow. And I don't. I'm trying to understand my own past now.
I see.
I haven't bounced for a long time. That might feel good, you know?
Bouncing?
I should try it.
Well, you dance. If that ain't bouncing, what is?
Yeah, well, that's true.
But that's... So, that's an interesting comment that you make. Do you want me to add something to it?
So, I don't know. I'm asking for your response. I guess if you have any, but maybe you don't.
Well, so in OCD, I'm also a psychologist, you guys. So in OCD, we become habituated to some calming and focusing ways of being. It becomes a habit that we become so dependent on that we can't live without it. So if I'm working with an OCD student, I'm trying to help them introduce a little bare awareness into that. A little bit of kind, non-judgmental bare awareness into that whole process. And I may be giving them some other calming and focusing tools to help them not be focused on that one habituated pattern, which really keeps them cut off from the world, which really doesn't open them up, which is really obsessing about certain specific splinters that are in there, and making your whole life these splinters, doing activities to prevent yourself from having to act out these splinters because these splinters are too scary. So that's OCD, but it's a very interesting issue that you brought up. Yeah, Stacy.
It's maybe along the same line, Tim, but when you talk about what's called magical thinking, in regards to especially like repeating mantra practices,
Well, magical thinking is not so good. Magical thinking is generally not so good. And we say that in Zen we don't do magical thinking. All the other religions do it, but we don't. Isn't that right? Don't we say that? Oh, at least I've heard myself say that. Right? But magical thinking, we think that this... I think Prajnaparamita there... I mean, I stand and look at the you know, I bow to her, although this is not her, she's his mama. She's his mama, right? So I bow to her every morning, and I, you know, say all bodhisattvas depend on prajnaparamita. But if I have magical thinking about that, I begin then to depend on a deity that's out there that I think is real and that has a specific power that the rest of reality doesn't. And that's okay for a little bit. But the problem is that I can get sucked into it, and it can become a way of dissociating from my open heart. So so we have to be careful about magical thinking. We have to be careful. And when we notice we're doing it, we should just use bare awareness to pay attention to it, which will, after a while, de-magical it, whatever you say. It will de-magical it if we pay attention to it.
And as far as with loving kindness practice,
uh-huh,
when we're in a way calling out to specific
people,
I wonder, like similarly, if we have a shard and we encounter that person again, like, you know, how does it make this person a magical person in our consciousness?
Well, yes. Well, I think your point is that we actually make this person a magical person. I've made Monica a magical person. I mean, all the poor woman's done is been saying, well, she's been coming here for how many years have you come here?
What?
Huh? Well, you were here when I came back, so 13, 14 years. I mean, how many talks has she heard? I mean, how many times has she heard me tell these stories? And yet, all of a sudden, she becomes magical for me. Because I get a shard in my heart, because she dissed me. I mean, I felt like she dissed me. But so here's a chance for me to pay attention to this, to pay attention to this piece of ice and let it melt. And when it melts, she's no longer magical. I just say, oh, well, of course she'd feel that way. How many times have you given that talk, Tim? Fess up to it. Oh, only eight? Well, Monica's been coming here 14 years, so she's heard it seven times, so, you know, she's no longer magical. Does that make sense?
Yes. In the loving kindness the mantras, you wish peace for her.
Yes, that's right.
And so
yes. That's the focusing. And that's, so I was giving you a bare awareness example, and you're just giving a focusing example. So a focusing practice of loving kindness, I bring her up specifically. She's one of those nasty people, one of the people that I'm having difficulty with, that I say, may she be happy. May she be happy. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
you have anything to add to that?
What's the role of wishing as opposed to calling practice? Like, why are we saying...
Wishing, well, but we're just doing it. We're not turning it into a big judgment or a big story. It is wishing, but it's not wishing going into a fantasy magical world. It's just, we're just stating our kind intention. So when it gets into all kinds of judgment and all kinds of fomenting about imagining her being like this and imagining her being like this and wishing, then I could get tripped out. So it's just very simple. Very simple. Keeping it simple. Keeping it straightforward. And then when we notice that we'd go into a big balloon about turning, wanting Monica, well, yeah, whatever we do. Whatever you do. I don't know. So, yes, loving kindness practice can also turn into tripped out practice. And if that's your point, is that your point? Yeah, anything can turn into tripped out practice. Any kind of these focusing and calming things, we can get tripped out on. But if we complement them with bare awareness, we won't. We won't. We will a little bit, but not. You know, we may a lot, but we'll come back. We'll always be able to come back. Always, it's just ice, and with a little kindness and openness, it always melts. But this is Minnesota, so it's always going to freeze up again. Oops, time's up.
The boat's
sure.